In the 80s, they came in here.
I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division, Wednesday, February 13th, 2013. First order of business is approval of the minutes. Are there corrections to the minutes, spellings, etc.? Anybody see anything needs to be corrected? Seeing none, Senator Skoy moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. We have four bills before us today. We'll have probably do number three and four together since they deal with the same issues. But we're going to start with Senate File 393, Senator Lemmer. Senator Lemmer, welcome to the Tax Committee. We miss you.
Madam Chair, that's the first time anyone has ever said that to me.
Oh, I doubt
leaving
it.
A committee.
We're glad to have you back to present this bill.
I'm glad to be here, too, on behalf of the City of Maple Grove. The bill before you, you might remember that we've had this issue come up before the last few years. But with the failure of an omnibus tax bill, everything else goes down with it, including the local needs of communities. The City of Maple Grove is back again. We have with us the City Administrator Al Mattson with us, who will be filling you in on details. Just in a brief introduction, the City of Maple Grove has a very large gravel mining operation. It supplies nearly 50% of the aggregate that's used for metropolitan roads and highways is drawn from this gravel pit area. However, the gravel pit area is beginning to shrink. Some of it's been mined out, and it's going through a process of reclamation. And as a result of that, you have some shopping areas now being developed on what was formerly gravel pit area. But there are added expenses on this very unique piece of land, and also there's a aquifer immediately below the gravel pit, and if you know how porous gravel pits are, it doesn't take much to filter through a gravel pit into an aquifer and cause a horrendous health problem. So in trying to develop the land as we're looking into the future, that land has added expenses that are very unique to this piece of property and a little bit different than, let's say, other lands around it in other regions. I'm going to hand it off to City Administrator Al Mattson, and he can give you the details and the history of this particular area.
Mr. Mattson, welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Chair Senator Rest, I'm Al Mattson, Maple Grove City Administrator. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. As Senator Lemmer stated, this is a repeat of last year. Our tax income proposal of last year found favor of the House and Senate, became a part of a large taxing bill, which unfortunately was vetoed. And so we are back again this year. Our proposal is to create a unique tax increment district for approximately 600 acres in the gravel mining area. This is acreage that, due to the terrain, due to the work that's taken place over the many, many years of mining, is much more difficult to develop. The costs of the infrastructure are horrendous, and so therefore we're looking for the establishment of a TIF to help offset the infrastructure costs. It's important to note that this is not a land write-down. Our proposal does not permit land write-down. Our proposal does not provide any tax increment funds directly to the business or the landowners. It is to help offset the cost of sewer, water, storm sewer, roads. Back in the 1990s, the landowners and the City of Maple Grove were asked by the Metropolitan Council to hold off on development of that area. because of the resource, the mining that was going on and the base that was needed for the entire metropolitan transportation system. And so we honored that request. We now, though, are finding ourselves, once the Arbor Lakes area has developed, we're finding a lot of inquiries from industrial and office projects. And our bill will be narrowly focused. It will be aimed at industrial and commercial development. It will not be used for retail or residential. Excuse me. It also is something of a unique situation where we will have it based on a project performance system. So not everybody is going to automatically qualify for TIF funds. It depends on the type of business. It depends on how well does a business fit into our land use plan. Job generation is extremely critical, the value of the project, things of that nature. And so it is narrowly focused on industrial and office, because that now is our, excuse me, recovering from surgery. I lose my voice from time to time. We're now in a position, though, to be aiming things at industrial and commercial. And again, we're pushing hard for job generation. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Again, this is a repeat of our proposal last year. We feel that this is going to help us open up that roughly 600 acres of land. We have a fantastic working relationship with the landowners. And certainly they're pleased if we could secure passage of our tax increment financing plan, even though it does not mean that they're going to get money in their pocket. Obviously, in a way, they're going to be able to sell their land a little bit easier. But again, no land write-down. I've always found over the years the city of Maple Grove has never done a land write-down TIF. I've always found that what happens is the landowner pushes the price of their land up, knowing that the property is going to be written down by TIF, and so I've always thought that we will never ever do something like that. So we're very, very
talk to your friends in other cities.
I'm sorry, pardon?
Say, talk to your friends in other cities.
We've been very conservative in the use of tax increment financing. Our TIF base is 0.3% of our entire tax capacity. So we have been very frugal in the use of TIF. We do feel, though, this is now a fantastic opportunity to open up roughly 600 acres of land for industrial and office. Job generation benefits the city, benefits the region, benefits the state, along with, obviously, the tax revenue that we feel is going to be coming in from the job generation. So I've got high aspirations for this. I pushed hard for it last year, and I continue to push hard for it because I think it's a fantastic opportunity for the city, the region, and the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
thank you, Mr. Madsen. Senator Limmer, as you know, in last year's tax bill, as well as we had asked you about the provisions that we put, at least in our committee, about this project and the one for Apple Valley, which were similar. Last year there was created general law rather than special law, and then we copied that as it had been negotiated. but then because we really needed to move quickly on the conformity issues, as you know from the Senate floor discussion, we did not include any of those non-controversial local economic development projects in the conformity bill. but I and probably we'll be more interested in similar general law provisions rather than the special law. And I want to know your opinion of that.
Madam Chair, I remember the sequence of events in the last few years, and we have no objection to having a more general, regional, or not regional, but a general approach to this need.
Okay.
There's other communities that have the same issue, very few with gravel pit areas in metropolitan areas, but nevertheless, the reclamation is important to making sure that the property gets back to a useful purpose and generates taxes for cities, and as well as creating amenities for those communities. And so I know that speaking with Mr. Madsen earlier this morning, that we would also be in agreement that that would satisfy the purpose of the city of Maple Grove as well.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Mattson or Senator Limmer, I wonder if with regard to the actual provisions in the bill, if you would just make a couple of statements about each of the deviations from what is current general law. For example, like you want an exemption from the five-year rule. And could you say we're asking for that because, and just go through the other ones that are being set, the other TIF provisions that are being set aside so that we'll, in this proposal, so that we can understand them and why it's needed to do that, so that at a point in the future we could defend it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the 5-year, we're looking for that to be adjusted because of the magnitude of the size of the project, 600
and maybe,
acres.
Not everyone is super familiar with the 4, 5, and 6-year rules, so if you could just say what the 5-year rule provides.
Well, the 5-year knockdown rule, and we're looking for 10 years in our proposal to give us a little bit more time. Again, the size of the area being 600 acres, but the magnitude of work that has to be done. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, and I'm dating myself, we developed a gravel mining area plan that related solely to engineering, did not at that time deal with land use, but it dealt with elevations and strictly engineering. We determined that there's going to have to be a number of stormwater retention ponds that will have to be laid out in a gravel mining area. And as Senator Limmer stated, because of the aquifer system that runs underneath the gravel mining area, all of the stormwater retention ponds will be lined. And so that pushes the cost of that up. So I guess that's one of the reasons why we feel that this is a unique piece of legislation, but also a unique opportunity, because the cost of sewer water, storm sewer, streets, the lining of the stormwater retention ponds, we just cannot get a developer that will step to the plate, even with the landowners being what I would call very cooperative in the pricing of their property. So this is a 25-year district, if I recall correctly.
I think it's 20.
Is it 20?
I think, it's a soil deficiency district. It's 20 years.
Soil deficiency district, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my apologies.
It's okay.
So I guess it's just the 5-year, we're looking for 10-year, but mainly because the amount of time that we feel it's going to take to get this underway.
You also asked for an exemption from the pooling rules. Would you explain why that is necessary for the project?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we feel the pooling rule is absolutely necessary, again, because of the costs that are going to be needed to develop that property. I guess any opportunity we can have to make the TIF legislation manageable and workable, I think that's what we're aiming at.
And the and that provision is where you may spend the revenues, and you're asking for that to go up to 80%, and the general rule is 25%. But again, you would attribute that to the magnitude of the project that you really need to be able to spend outside of the district but inside the project area. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, that is absolutely correct.
And you're also asking to for another 10 years to actually start the district. Is that why do you think you need – why may it take that long to get everything in place before you authorize the district? Just curious.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would say that that's a pessimistic approach.
You hope to get it done
Yeah, my view is that in my lifetime, certainly want to get this done. But before I retire from the city, I would like to obviously get this well underway. But I think the 10 years is probably a pessimistic time frame.
And have
I think it's gonna happen sooner. I'm sorry.
And then have any you also call for the resolutions by the city council? Have any of them already taken place?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, that is correct. Last year, the city council did approve a resolution. Adopting a resolution approving a gravel mining area TIF, yes, for Maple Grove.
Okay, those are the questions I have. Senator Skoy, further?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm looking at your map down by Interstate 94. Is that where the old C.S. McCrossin shop place is? Am I in the right geography there?
You are absolutely correct, yes.
Okay, and then, Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Can you walk me through on the map what the red hatched area is? I think I get Arbor Lakes as the solid red. And what is the area that this project is going to be included in?
Mr. Mattson or Senator Limmer, you want to help us with your map?
The red hatched area relates to our land use plan and the type of development that we're looking in that particular area, mixed-use development, combination industrial office, things of that type. So it relates to the city's overall land use plan.
And, Madam Chair,
Senator Skoy.
So the entire colored area is the area that's the project area?
The dotted line that you see from 85th Avenue all the way down to 94, there's about 602 acres. In there.
Are
correct, that's close to the old C.S. McCrossin plant, which is right along 94, but it does involve the current C.S. McCrossin operation, which is just along Jefferson Highway, but it also includes Tiller Corporation's gravel mining area processing facility in there as well. So, because at some point in time, those are going to have to be relocated or shut down, but we see this as, and I guess the reason we're asking for the length of the TIF is because that is going to have to be phased out over time. And there's still a very strong source of gravel in that area for our transportation system. So another reason, I guess, why we're asking for the length.
Senator Skoy.
Well, to the current gravel operation, do they have a timeline to how long that might remain active?
Mr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you would have asked me that question 5 years ago, I would have said 20 years. We were thinking the full build-out of Maple Grove would be 2020. Because of the downturn, we're now thinking the full build-out is going to be somewhere around 2030. The gravel mining operations themselves are probably there are some aspects of in there, and of the 600 acres, there are some pockets in there that probably will still be going for the next 25 years, maybe even 30 years. Some of the landowners in there, though, have other operations throughout, and so they're starting to use that resource, less of the resource that's within Maple Grove.
And one last question.
Senator Skoy.
To the chair's point about the 10 years at before the project needs to start, and you said that's a pessimistic viewpoint, would it be possible for us to adjust that time frame and still have it work for you?
I think it would be, depending on what the adjustment is. If it's adjusted down to 5, I think that might be somewhat difficult. As I stated, I agree that the 10 might be a pessimistic, but I'm thinking somewhere around 7 or 8. Certainly could be workable. Yes,
Madam Chair, and we'll make sure that we talk to you and Senator Limmer and make sure that see how that fits within the general law provisions that are currently there. Also,
Madam Chair,
and Senator Skoy, I think too, looking at when we consider the Apple Valley component of this, we want to make sure that we're not hurting one where for the other it doesn't make any difference.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer?
Just on that point, I know that the 20-year figure was kind of a worst-case scenario. There's some elements that we just can't control. And as Mr. Mattson realized, just in the last 5 years, the severity of the economic downturn, especially affecting real estate, has kind of altered the time plan. And so I would hope that we could at least recognize that as we're picking a number in time. I know it's kind of hard to do, but I'm not sure if the economy is going to suddenly erupt open and we're all going to be, you know, having a demand for real estate development anytime soon. So, and that's the whole purpose of having this before us, is to encourage the development, and just so we don't hamstring ourselves in making that limitation.
And Madam Chair,
I don't know what the magic number is.
Senator Scoy.
And Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, I think I heard say that the general law provisions that we've included in the vetoed tax bill does work. So as long as, unless we make some changes to that, it will work for Maple Grove.
And I thought that, Senator Scoy, correct me if I'm wrong, that you were asking about why you would need the another 10 years even to have the authority to start the TIF district. That's what we were questioning, not the actual rules that you're asking for exemptions from. So we'll be in discussions with you about that, and with Senator Clausen about the accompanying Apple Valley impact on the same thing. Are there further questions or comments for Senator Limmer or Mr. Mattson? Mr. Mattson, do you have the final comment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I mentioned previously that this will be what we consider anyway to be a unique tax increment financing district, because we'll be setting this up as the projects come along. So this is going to be on a case-by-case basis, project-by-project basis. It is not going to be a carte blanche. Any developer that does come in is going to have to meet our project point system. And so it's going to be on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you very much. Any further comments? So, Senator Limmer, we're going to lay your bill over, and later on we'll be considering it as a general law change rather than special TIF district. Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Senate 393 is laid over. Next, we have Senate File 472, and is Senator Westrum in the room? We want to take both of these together since they deal with the same set of issues with regard to the purchase of the 800 megahertz public safety radio communication systems. And Senator Coonan and Senator Westrum have a different approach, but we're going to hear some background on this situation and then the how the approaches differ. And I think Senator Westrum, please join us at Senator Coonan at the witness table, if you will. We're going to. I don't know, Senator Westrum, if you heard my introduction, but your bill and Senator Coonan's bill deal with the same general area, as you know, and we're going to discuss the both bills together. But we want to start with some background from you two gentlemen, however you'd like to proceed, and I think we will start with even though Senator Westrum's bill has a lower number, we're going to start with Senator Coonan just giving us some general background, and then I'll call on Senator Westrum to explain his approach, and then go back to Senator Coonan with his approach. Okay? So if you could start off by giving us some background on this issue, Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have an amendment to my bill also, the A3 amendment.
Okay, we will take that up if that could be distributed.
Should I start walking through the bill first?
No, we want to adopt the amendment first, and after we adopt it, for the benefit of Senator Westrom, I want you to explain it. Does everyone have it now?
I don't.
Okay, Senator Coonan moves the A3 amendment. It's an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment to Senate File 472 is adopted. It was a delete everything, so now if you just explain your amendment that we just adopted and then go back and talk about the general background for the need for these bills. Senator Coonan.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. What this bill does is for all counties that are updating their emergency equipment, radio equipment, that includes the armor system and counties that chose to just meet the requirements of the FCC's limit on bandwidth, which took effect January 1st. So it includes all counties, no matter what kind of equipment they use, is a sales tax exemption on the purchase of that equipment. Right now, 25 counties have an exemption from this sales tax, and I think there's a map that was handed out. It's in your folder that shows the counties that are exempt now. but again, this bill would include all counties, and it also goes retroactive and includes any purchases made after April 30th of 05 and before July 1 of 13, and then of course extends the exemption on into the future.
Senator Coonan, could you explain how this situation arose and how did we get to this place?
Well, some of the testifiers may be able to talk to this more in depth than I can, but just a quick review. Over time, there was three different bills introduced and enacted in 97, 2005, and 2008 that authorized exemption for certain counties as we moved along through time. And then, of course, since then, with the budget difficulties, there's been a number of bills introduced that would have done the same thing, but because of the recession and the tight budget issues, none of those ever were passed into law. And so that's kind of a quick overview of what happened. And again, some of our testifiers may be able to go into that more in depth than I can at this time. But that's a quick overview. We can let Senator Westrom explain his bill, and then I do have testifiers too.
Okay. I'd like members to know, staff has let us know that the revenue estimate we have for Senate File 472 does not reflect the A3 amendment, and so it will have to be redone. It doesn't keep us from considering it, obviously, but it will have to be corrected.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Sure. And the change from the revenue estimate to the bill as amended does not include the 9/11 communication system, but
the
department will be looking at this again. So.
Okay. Thank you for indicating what the difference will be when we get it. Senator Westrom, did you want to add anything to the background? And you can go ahead and explain then Senate File 63, and then we'll hear testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I haven't done a detailed comparison, but generally Senate File 63 is a similar concept as Senator Coonan's. One distinct difference in our bill would be we aren't looking to go retroactive. I am not opposed to going retroactive, nor do I think my counties or public safety officials would be opposed, but the idea with the House author was to just not have it as expensive as retroactive would be. And so
does your bill include the 9/11 provisions?
No, Madam Chair, I don't believe so. We just deal with the investment of the 800 megahertz or the armor system for the counties that don't have it.
So in that regard, with Senator Coonan's amendment, it now both bills speak to exactly the same issue, but Senator Coonan's is retroactive. Have I characterized that correctly, gentlemen? Ms. Pollack. Ms. Pollack will give us an explanation.
Madam Chair and members, without the 911 call center language in Senator Coonan's bill as it has been amended, the two bills are the same in that regard. However, Senator Coonan's bill would also include an exemption for public radio safety communication systems that are not on the armor system. So there are systems that are equivalent and meet the federal 800 megahertz mandate, but not necessarily the state armor system.
And Senator Coonan, why is that a good idea?
The reasoning that we're using in this bill for including all counties, including those not involved in the armor system, is that the federal law requires all counties to update into the narrow band, which took effect January 1st, I believe, and so all counties by law, by federal law, had to do something, and so it wasn't a choice they had, it's something they had to do. And so that's the reasoning in this bill.
And Senator Westrom, why did you not include them, and do you have strong feelings about that?
Well, Madam Chair, as I said, I mean, primarily the cost issue.
It's cost.
In the past, we've tried these bills. Retroactive is always tougher because it adds more cost, and it's been impossible to get this through with the budgets we've had anyways, and so the hope would be some relief is better than nothing.
Got it.
For something that our counties and public safety have had to do and have to continue to do. And so I'll make one last point, and then maybe we can have the testifiers
yes.
talk about it. But to the history issue that you talked
yes.
about, Madam Chair, while I wasn't in the Senate, I was in the House and remember some of these discussions distinctly. And originally, as I recall, it was basically just given to the 7 or 9 county metro area because in the beginning, they were the only area that was ready to build out and anticipating that they were going to move into that direction. And so from a cost standpoint or a political compromise, as I recall it, back in the late 90s, they gave those areas a sales tax exemption, figuring they could, in the future, they'd give other areas that are ready to build out. Well, Stearns County, St. Cloud area has gotten it. Rochester and some of those areas have gotten it. But there's a large part of western Minnesota and northern and southern Minnesota that haven't. And just we think it's also an equitable issue. But that's part of the reason I recall. And, Madam Chair, you've been here longer than I have, but I think you might recall maybe that's part of the reason that it's been this added, some counties added in as over time.
I think your recollection matches mine. Senator Gazelka, before we go to the witnesses, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, it was, I think, mostly clarified there. My question was related to this is a mandate. It's required. A number of counties already get it, and, you know, what was the history but beyond not having all of them. So my hope is that we can solve this session because, you know, clearly all the counties I represent, they're mandated to do it as well. And, you know, I think the more we can help them with this, the better.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka. We'll now move to the testimony after we hear from Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And while the testifiers are addressing the equity issue, if any of them have any background on the dollars that the federal government has put into this, and what I'm curious about is to make sure that the local effort is kind of comparable to see if we can get some information on what the local effort is on all of these differing projects.
We'll now move, thank you. We'll now move to the testifiers. Mr. Sternberg?
That's close enough.
Okay, and welcome to the committee, and we like your tie.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
It's a tie with red, white, and blue stripes and, you know, flag tie. Senator Westrum.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Vance Stuerenberg, and I am a Blue Earth County Commissioner. I also currently serve as Secretary Treasurer of the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC is a nonpartisan, voluntary organization representing all 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. On behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, we would like to thank Senator Coonan as well as Senator Westrum for their support on this topic. In the interest of fairness and equity, we support the expansion of the public safety radio sales tax exemption to all 87 counties in Minnesota. I would like to reinforce two key provisions in Senate File 472 that are of great interest to AMC and our member counties. The first is the retroactivity of the exemption. In order to truly treat all counties equally, we need to not only exempt them from the sales tax going forward, but also provide a rebate for sales taxes paid. Many non-exempt counties have fully migrated to ARMR, or narrowband VHF, or are contemplating migration to ARMR, and while there are upgrades and maintenance in the future, the bulk of the county expense has already been paid. The second area I'd like to emphasize is the language that keeps this broad enough to allow the exemption for those that upgraded radio equipment in order to comply with FCC narrowbanding mandate, but have not yet migrated to ARMR. In any case, significant costs have been incurred by those counties. We have worked for many years to bring this equity to the state, and we would appreciate your support. Thank you, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Are there any questions for him? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Next on the list of those wishing to testify, Mr. Keith Carlson from MICA. Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. That has 12 of the larger and growing counties in its membership. Two of our members are directly affected by this bill, one being Blue Earth and the other being St. Louis County. Just to give the committee a little further information about this, you'll see the existing language refers to the backbone system of the region-wide public safety radio communications system. That backbone was actually built by the state to serve the state patrol and MnDOT and other state agencies, and was developed in such a way that basically the coverage that it provided was along the state's trunk highway system. Once you got beyond that coverage, there was no communications that could go by that system. So depending on which county you happen to be in and the extent of the state system, which obviously is tied to the number of trunk highways within your county, your level of investment to basically become part of that system varied immensely. For St. Louis County, they were at the poor end of the state coverage and had to make substantial investments enumerating to nearly $8 million. The sales tax that they have paid will be in excess of $700,000. We do believe this is a substantial equity issue. 70 of the 87 counties have migrated to the state system. 10 of those remaining 17 are planning on migrating to the state system, and has Commissioner Sternberg has already indicated, the other 7 have still had to make substantial investments as a result of the FCC mandate that forced them to migrate to the new VHF narrowband system. All these systems are to some extent interoperable and achieve the objectives that are intended by the region or statewide system. Again, I encourage the committee to give consideration to both Senator Westrom's and Senator Coonan's bill, and appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Any questions or comments from Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carlson, you've been around during a lot of these years of this debate. Do you think the local effort for all of these counties has been comparable, or as you mentioned with St. Louis County and the effort that they had to do to become part of this network, is that an oddity, or is that the norm, or how does that play out?
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, I basically think there are two factors. One is the geography and the extent of state coverage that's in effect dictated by how much of the county is covered by state trunk highways. If your geography is wider and you have less state trunk highways within that geography, you have to make considerably more investment. The other is basically when you've come along in migrating to the new system, the state has issued two revenue bonds, I believe, to basically assist with its costs and provide grants of up to 50% of the cost to the localities. Basically, the state has run out of that money at this point. So if you're at the tail end of the process, the state money for the grants is no longer there. But as you've identified, another source of funding has been the federal dollars. A lot of that came a couple years ago with ARRA, if I'm got the right acronym, from the anti-recessionary funding that was provided by the federal government. Again, we're kind of reaching the end of the availability of those funds. So, again, they're basically two factors: when and what's your geography, and what's the state coverage.
Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Carlson. And so, what I kind of think I heard is that the state money is run out, and the federal money is probably at the end of its life. So for these counties that haven't, those dollars won't be available. So this is probably the money that they're going to get as a state support.
Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, I think, the state, I think, certainly has a commitment here, but there would have to be additional action by the legislature to somehow appropriate additional dollars to meet the 50% match that, in all frankness, was rarely met. It was up to a 50% match. For example, of the $8 million that St. Louis County incurred, they got state grant of approximately $2 million. So they got 25%, not 50%.
And one final question.
Senator Skoy.
The seven counties up in the northwest corner that are not looking like they're going to head into the armor but are using a different mechanism for meeting the federal criteria, does that work between the state armor system and the state patrol system so that it's pretty seamless, or are there issues that, or are you not the person to ask about that question?
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, for the specifics, I'd prefer you talk to representatives of the Department of Public Safety, but my understanding is regardless of which system you're on, there's a degree of interoperability that goes towards that objective.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on either one of these bills?
Madam Chair, we have two officers, Sheriff from Candy, Ohio, and Deputy Officer from Grant County.
And they're invited to the table. Or, yes, come on, gentlemen. And I see someone else stood up to address this as well, and we'll call on her in just a moment. Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourselves for the record, we're pleased to have your testimony.
Madam Chair, my name is Dan Hartog, Candua County Sheriff. Madam Chair, I'm Troy Langley with the Grant County Sheriff's Office.
Okay. Proceed.
Thank you for your time today. Really, all we're asking here out of Senator Westrom's bill is equality, and that's already been discussed here. Let's just make this right for all 87 counties in the state rather than just 25. And so we feel that the best way forward to accomplish that would be to adopt Senator Westrom's bill. And, you know, we're willing to forgo the retro pay as long as we can move forward with this same sales tax exemption. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Madam Chair, I sit on the Minnesota Sheriff's Board, past president, and also on the Regional Radio Board. And, again, we would like to see this bill move forward. I was here several years ago, and we talked about this bill also, and at that time it had the retroactive pay in it. But I know in our region, our radio region, which is a central area of the state, we spent $1.1 million in sales tax. I know in Kanduak County, we went to the system in 2009, and Kanduak County spent almost $100,000. And the money that's going towards the sales tax would be used to purchase a lot of other radio equipment, and it's just not for law enforcement, fire, but for public utilities and ambulance services and that type of thing. That would be a great asset to them to help buy equipment.
And you gentlemen would be satisfied with either one of the approaches in this bill? Is that what you're telling us this morning?
Yes, we would
okay.
be.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the officers? Sheriff. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you speak for all the county sheriffs across the state then? Is that your position for your county, or is it for all county sheriffs?
Sheriff.
Madam Chair, the Minnesota Sheriff's Association supports the bill with not the retroactive, but to move forward and with the sales tax exemption.
Okay. Thank you very much. If you all would, there's a witness list there. If you would sign that as you leave the table there, we'd appreciate it. And then there was one more person who indicated she'd like to testify. We'll hear from her.
Thank you.
Yes. Ms. Finn.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. I'll try not to be redundant, but we do offer our support for both the Western and Canyon Bills. We've heard from a number of city officials that armor is an important tool both to public safety and also to some other operations like their public works departments. We're supportive of any measure that can expedite full integration of the armor system. We would appreciate your favorable consideration of exempting armor from the sales tax. And just one other point, since you've talked about the distinction between the two bills, our policy really doesn't speak specifically to the retroactive bill, but it might help some communities, certainly.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Finn. Also, if you would sign the witness list there. Any other discussion of either Senate File 472 or Senate File 63? Seeing none, both bills are laid over, and we will, and Kunin's, Senator Kunin's has amended, and we will revisit the issue, I'm sure, in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Westrom. The next bill is Senate File 326, Senator Kunin, I need you to chair.
Okay, Senator Rest, your bill, Senate File 326, was it your intention to have it laid over?
Yes. But first, I want to present it.
Right.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 326, it deals with a sales tax issue, and in particular, as it affects a special industry, and that is auto repair. That includes generally includes, as you know, if you've had your car repaired after a crash of some sort, includes repainting. And currently, the auto repair shops will purchase the paint and in bulk, and they pay the sales tax on it at that point. And what happens is that they have found it nearly impossible to come up with a formula of then including the paint as to apply to the bill as the customer leaves the auto repair shop with their newly painted and repaired vehicle. And so they have asked us to consider, instead of using the principle of first use as the point at which the sales tax is attached, to instead do it at the point where the customer pays his bill and leaves the shop. And so it's moving away from first use, but I believe when you hear the explanation, more explanation for the process, that you will agree that it is a better policy for this particular industry. And I have with me Mr. Wally from the I don't remember the name of the organization, but that represents the interests of these folks. And I do have one of these fairly large auto repair businesses in my district, and had the opportunity summer a year ago, I believe it was, to visit their shop and actually see how that process works and the difficulties they encounter in having accurate formulas to reflect the sales tax within their pricing system. So I would there is a revenue estimate in your packets, because it is moving the point at which sales tax is collected. It does bring funds into the general fund, revenue into the general fund. Mr. Wally.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Kevin Wally. I'm representing the Alliance of Automotive Service Providers, which is the state trade association for the automotive repair industry. Senator Rest's bill does change the point of imposition of sales tax for paint and materials from the wholesale to the retail level. Currently, auto repair shops pay the tax at the wholesale point. They end up absorbing those costs because there isn't a method to itemize the materials and the paint on the final invoice. These materials are used in the repair process, and they're applied to the vehicle, and most of the product leaves the repair shop on the car. Senator Rest's bill provides a method to calculate the sales tax at the retail level. It's an hours times a rate of consideration formula for paint and materials that's authorized in the bill. It establishes a surrogate value for purposes of calculating the sales tax. This formula is used in many other states, including the state of Wisconsin. In enacting this provision, Minnesota would become more typical rather than less typical in its treatment of paint and materials for purposes of sales tax. We've supported this change for many years. There hasn't been any testimony in opposition to this provision in years past, nor do we expect any this year. Senator Rest noted that there is a revenue note And I think it's the revenue note that has been the barrier in the most recent cycles here at the legislature. So we would respectfully request that the provision be enacted this year, and I would be willing to stand for any questions you might have or provide further explanation if need be.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Wally? Senator Scalia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wally, just so I think my memory is right, but if you could confirm this, I thought I heard in years past in testimony that part of the problem was in the mechanism that they used to estimate the repair, and that function didn't have a capability to calculate the sales tax or something along that line. Am I remembering that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, yes, we have made that point that the estimating systems, and there's three standard estimating systems used in the industry, and none of them provide the ability to break down the specific itemized amounts of paint and materials that you could then translate onto a final invoice. And that is something that we can't change because of the industry standards, and those are the basic mechanisms that are used for the estimating process. What Senator Rest's bill provides and what our past efforts have provided is a formula to calculate a value for those materials that then would go on the invoice.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd also just would draw members' attention to the actual statute that's being proposed to be changed. And it is where the definition of a retail sale is provided in Chapter 297A. You might find it interesting of the things where when something is a retail sale, the tax is imposed. But there, in this part of the statutes, there's a lot of explanations of, well, if this event occurs, it's not a retail sale, it's a sale for resale, which is not taxable. And we have added provisions to that to this statute over time. But what we're saying is with regard to the sale of this paint, it and materials, it is a retail sale, and that's why we want to move it there rather than the first use. And then furthermore, in Section 2 of the bill, we put the definition of what exactly we mean for the purposes of this proposal, what is paint, what's included in paint and materials. So it will be defined as well as being being noted where the point of sale is going, where the sale occurs, that is the taxable event in paragraph N.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rest, I'm glad you brought me to this provision because I'm reading line 3.13 and 3.14. Is that the sentence that then would mean that if there was a small amount of touch-up done at an automobile auction facility that would not be taxed there, but the tax would be collected on the sale of the automobile? Is that what we're heading for there?
We're not proposing any change to the way in which automobile auctions are taxed with regard to whatever kind of paint they pay. So they buy paint, they pay the tax.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything, any further questions, members? Okay, Senator Rest, any further comments?
No, Mr. Chairman. We can lay the bill over and adjourn. Just for members, we are, tomorrow we're taking up Senator Saxhog's PILT bill, also the report from an advisory group on PILT, and also Senator Dietzick will be presenting the department's policy bill, and Senator Eaton the technical bill. So that's the agenda for the division for the rest of the week.
All right. Thank you, Senator Rest. Anything further, Senator Scott?
The full committee will be meeting on Thursday. We're going to hear the property tax work group report. And then there were a couple of bills that we didn't get to last week that I would expect we would be hearing.
Okay, good. Thank you. Well, if there's nothing further, Senate File 326 is laid over, and we're adjourned.